Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. Here, the result is always positive. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Here we will discuss the mysteries of the universe. When we are done, you will never look at the stars, your scriptures, or yourself the same again. Whether you are in a truck headed for the coast, or in a car coming home from the beach, or listening in your shop as you work on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about where you came from, why you are here, and where you are going than you ever thought possible. In here, your potential is absolutely unlimited. Tonight, in our cosmology section, we're going to be discussing end times prophecies. And I can think of no better authority on the planet today than my co-author, E.J. Clark. So we will be interviewing her at the top of our program. In our Nephilim section tonight, we will be discussing the enslavement of a society by the manipulation of the world's energy. If you would like to participate in tonight's program, you can reach me instantly by going to bbsradio.com, click on the X Squared Radio link, and access the show through the Live Harmony chat room. This is faster than email, and no one is ever put on hold. I will follow your comments live on the radio and respond as I am inspired. If you ever wanted your voice and your thoughts to be addressed on global radio, this is your chance. As we expand the program, next week we will be adding toll-free phone service so your thoughts in your voice can be heard throughout the universe. This is the most important subject material in the universe, so you might as well participate. Remember who you are, and let's get ready to enter X Squared Radio. The Arc of Millions of Years is the greatest story on the universe. Volume 1 solves the mystery of evolution and creation once and for all. In its 530 pages, you will learn about the origin and destiny of the Earth. Many people call it the Intelligent Design Handbook. You will learn about the ancient giants and their fathers, the Nephilim. You will learn about man's long history of interaction with off-worlders. You will learn the common origin of many of mankind's most powerful religious symbols. When you are done with that book, you will know more about the creation of the Earth than anyone else on the planet. It's available at, of course, www.arcofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell that A-R-K of millions of years. Or you can get it at your Barnes & Noble or Joseph Beth, and introducing now Davis Kidd Booksellers. Also, we want to mention that during the show tonight, if you want to purchase the book, you will receive free shipping. And if you buy the hardback, you will get the entire book on audio CD shipped to you for free. We're also offering 2 free audio chapters on the website for iPods, or you can download them to your computer and burn a CD and listen to it in your automotive CD, or soon we will be podcasting those chapters, so you'll be able to pick it up with your iPod in a podcast fashion. All right, section 1, cosmology. I would like to introduce E.J. Clark, not only my co-author, but a great intrepid explorer, archaeologist for over 30 years, crawled over the pyramids, through caves, down jungles, has corrected many archaeological interpretive mistakes on ancient carvings and ancient frescoes. And so I would like to welcome tonight E.J. Clark. Good evening.
Thank you, Brooks. I'm really happy to be on your show tonight.
Well, we're happy to have you. This is amazing technology that we have nowadays, that we can bring such level of truth and freedom and free speech to whoever and whomever wants to take the time to listen to it. In days past, media has been strictly controlled, not allowing those with new ideas or fresh ideas the opportunity to communicate with others. We have discussed on this show in the past how, in ages past, how governments controlled all forms of communication. In those days, it would have been print, and they kept things like the scriptures away from people until the Gutenberg press allowed the Bible to proliferate. And today we have the internet, which is allowing us to bring fresh, intelligent radio to the public free of charge so that they can listen and become enlightened. So we're very happy to have you here tonight as well. Well, we were going to discuss the subject of end times prophecies. Now, most people, I have found as I interview people on the street during my show prep for this program, they think of end times prophecies, they immediately go to the book of Revelations in the Bible. Largely, it's a mystery to them. I don't know very many people that can quote a single scripture out of Revelations, but they're nevertheless fascinated with all of the cataclysms and upheavals and end times events that are listed there, as well as in Matthew. But there are lots of other sources, aren't there?
Yes, there really are.
Well, one of the questions that a lot of people ask me is, how do we know that we're living in the end times? Hasn't everybody kind of had that idea?
Well, that's an interesting question, and you'll get a lot of different answers. But really, most of the people, your ministers, the prophets of old and everything, they say that the time or the day that we're living in today is the end times. But if you really want to get the correct answer, if you could go back and talk to the early Roman or the early Greeks and ask them that very same question, this would be the answer that you get. They would say the end times are the years, the months, and the days that more closely precede the end of the age.
What kind of age? Because I kind of know that, well, great prophets of old, Isaiah, Ezekiel, Malachi, and I also remember quotes of Jesus Christ saying that the time is at hand, the end is near, and yet we're, you know, 2,000 and at least 2,005 years away from the end of time. So why is this time special compared to 2,000 years ago?
Well, you have to understand an astrological event that is going to occur, and which is occurring now. It's called the end of precession.
Now what's precession?
Well, I was hoping you would tell everyone about that. For me, it's difficult to explain, although I can explain it in fairly simple terms, but why don't you go ahead and give a try at it?
Well, I understand precession to be the course, the completion of the Earth's course through the entire zodiac, all 12 signs of the zodiac. And I understand about now, mid or maybe early 2000, I know there are some accurate calendars out there that you're going to explain to us in a moment, but about now we are entering what's known as the Age of Aquarius.
Right. Well, let me explain it just a little bit more. This precession, you know, the Earth sits on a tilted axis.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and it has a wobble in its axis. And one wobble takes 26,000 years. That is sort of what precession is. And a precession is a backward movement of the constellations as we view it from the Earth's perspective. But it takes 26,000 years, or more precisely, 25,920 years. Most people just round it off to 26,000 years. But it takes 26,000 years to make one complete cycle of precession. Now, the interesting thing is this, that precession is known by other names, too. It is called the Great Year. And another name for it is the Platonic Year or Plato's Year. But it also means, and this is very important, it means it's the end of an aeon. 26,000 years equals one aeon. And the early Greeks and Romans, they referred to this, and even in the biblical scriptures, I believe, they referred to it as the Centella aeon.
Now, this event, and so you're saying it's 29,000 and some change. What date does that wind up being?
2012.
The year 2012.
Mm-hmm. The year 2012.
7 years from now.
7 years from now.
Does it give a month and a day?
December, and it's most people agree that it will occur the 21st through the 23rd, 3 days. But that is the time. But now there is another age associated with this, too. And this is what makes this date so special. Is not only is it the end of an aeon, but it's the end of an age, too. Now, an age is typically 2,150 or 60 years. And in each age, the Earth has been transiting one of the zodiac constellations. It takes 2,150 or 160 years to pass through one of these zodiac constellations. We are now leaving the age of Pisces in a backward movement, and we are approaching the age of Aquarius. And right now we are at the dawning of the age of Aquarius. But it officially begins in the year 2012, the same time as the end of the aeon. So we have two ages that are coming to an end on that date.
And the ancients thought this would be very significant.
Oh, yes. And there's more to it.
Well, we want it all tonight.
Okay. Well, I think we just kind of will gradually work into it.
Now, there is a precise calendar out there that it has had some events past that it accurately predicted. I understand the arrival of Cortez in the lands and time of Montezuma was correctly marked on the calendar in advance. How was that done?
Now, that's correct. Well, the Mayans, 2012 is also the Mayan end time date, and some people are familiar with it and some are not. You will find that I wanted to know, where did the Mayans get this date? Where did it come from? It had to come from somewhere. So after a little research, and actually we did a whole chapter on it in our Volume 2 book, it came from a very ancient calendar that is called the Zolkin calendar. It's the divine or religious long count calendar of the Maya. And they use this to measure the cycle of the Pleiades.
Sounds pretty complicated.
Well, it is. It's really a complicated calendar because not only does it do that, but it has 17 calendars built within it. And you have to receive special training in order to understand how it works. The ordinary folk cannot read this calendar. It takes a daykeeper to do it. Now, a little history on this calendar is that it was used anciently in the old world, all over Mesopotamia, the Near and the Far East, that would include Egypt, and Tibet as well.
Do you think this calendar had a common origin, a single original designer?
Yes, it did. We traced it back, and I'm pretty confident that this calendar was designed by Abraham and Shem. The reason I feel this, because Abraham wore a device around his neck that was called a tablet. And this tablet was inscribed much with symbols very similar to the Zolkin calendar. And it is said that people would, when he went out his front door in the morning, there would be a crowd of people out there waiting to see him, and they wanted their forecast for their day. They wanted to know if it was a good day to sell goats or a bad day to go to war or a good day to make a business deal or whatever.
Sort of like fortune telling?
Well, not exactly. It was based on more, it's more accurate than fortune telling.
So this would have maybe been the roots of astrology.
I think so. But it depends on how you read the calendar and your knowledge. But anyway, the knowledge in this calendar was used for centuries, and it was finally carried over to Central America by the Babylonians. And of course, it spread all over. Anciently in the Central America, it was used all over. But today, you will find the calendar being used mostly in Guatemala, southern Mexico, Central America, and the northern part of South America. It appears the Gregorian calendar replaced most of these ancient calendars, and that was a sad thing.
Well, it does seem a little bit easier to use, breaking things down into seven-day weeks and months of varying lengths in order to make the year work out, and I think we have to adjust it every 4 years to make sure it's back on track. But I understand that this calendar has a way of doing that automatically.
Yes, it does. But first I wanted to say that the American Indians could use a form of that calendar, and they refer to it as the natural time of things. So it is used partially here, you know, in the United States.
So they don't think of today as October 19th, 2005.
I really don't think so. I don't know exactly how they use it, but they are using a form of it.
Well, I know that the names of the months that we have now are what, Greek or Roman in origin, and they're mostly pagan names?
Perhaps.
So perhaps the names of, I don't know how they divide up their years. I think it was 28-day moon cycles and then 13 months in a year, and then there was a 265-day cycle inside the Zolkin calendar, but I'm not exactly sure how it works.
Well, we explain it in Chapter 2 the best that we could because we're not day keepers. But I'm sure there was some name changes. The calendar came from the Middle East and came over to this country. We know that they adapted this calendar. They improved it. They made it better after it was over here.
So and it was accurate at predicting things.
Mm-hmm. They made some changes. But this calendar, the most wonderful thing that I found out about it, that not only does it keep track of days and times for our time, but it has the marvelous ability to tell time in the dimensions. It's an intra-dimensional calendar. The Mayans and the Aztecs who used this part and who referred to it in the dimensional time, they were called the Cosmic Mayans and the Cosmic Aztecs.
How about that? So they had special education. Now, when you say that it was a dimensional calendar,
mm-hmm.
does that mean that it predicted dates of interaction between dimensions, or that maybe a dimension is parallel to this world?
I think so, because this is how they received all of their prophecy for future events. And I think it's how good you are at interpreting some of these things you had to be really good at being an astrologer or a day keeper. But they were able to predict maybe 50 years in advance, or maybe many thousands of years in advance, of events that were going to happen.
So this is how, when Cortez showed up on the scene, somehow Montezuma and those that were the, you call them date keepers of the day, kind of expected his arrival.
Absolutely. They were waiting for him. This calendar not only had the ability to tell the date, 1519 is when Cortez arrived. The calendar predicted the date. It said what they would look like, that they were bearded white men. It predicted what they had on their heads. They called them casques, but it was really a helmet.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It told what the nature of them coming to this continent was, and that was to destroy their idols.
Really?
Yes. And then it said also they were going to conquer the Aztec kingdom.
And yet they still welcomed them instead of burning their ships to the water.
Yes, they did, because they perceived them as being gods.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
I see. I do remember a legend of them expecting a bearded white god to return.
Absolutely. And then another thing. See, this calendar was used in the ancient, in the Far East, and it was probably the same calendar that the Magi of Bethlehem used to know about the birth of Christ.
So when the wise men spoken of, or it actually mentioned in traditions of Judeo-Christians, traveled from afar to follow the sign of the new star.
Absolutely.
They didn't have the writings of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John to go by, which they weren't even, they were fishermen and doctors at the time and publicans. They weren't, Christ wasn't even born yet. Somebody had scripture or something that told them when that star was going to appear and what it would mean when it did appear.
They did. They had the Zolkin calendar. That was the document they used.
How about that? And all this is going to be covered in Volume 2 of The Ark of Millions of Years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a good time to take a commercial break. Just hang on one moment. Have you ever wondered how the Earth was created and relocated to its present orbit? Would you like to know how the Earth can be both 7,000 years old and 4.5 billion years old? Did you know that Noah told the people when he arrived after the flood that he had sailed across the cosmic sea? The answers to these and thousands of other questions about intelligent design can be found in the bestseller, The Ark of Millions of Years. Forward Magazine says that it will fundamentally change beliefs. Thousands of readers call it the greatest story on the universe. And it's available in soft or hardcover at www.arkofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell that A-R-K instead of A-R-C. Or you can pick it up at your local Barnes & Noble store, Joseph Beth Booksellers, and now Davis Kidd Booksellers in Nashville, Jackson, and Memphis, Tennessee. And, of course, if you buy from the website tonight during the program, you will receive either book with free shipping, or if you buy the hardback, you will receive at a later date, mailed to you for free, the entire book on audio CDs, so you can listen to it in your car. You can also download 2 free chapters read in audio on the website. You can download that to your computer, burn a CD and listen to it in your car, or you can download it to your iPod, and it is available for podcasting as well. So let us return to our subject material. So this great event, this end of the procession, this 29,000 and some change, the Byzantine calendar was used by multiple cultures and multiple ages. This is how they came up with accurate markings of special events that were going to happen, not the least of which was the birth of the Son of God. So now that we're coming up to what ancient prophets agree might be the end of the age or the end times, what can we prepare for? What does the Byzantine calendar say is going to happen now?
Well, it's a very exciting time to live in this age, and it is the end of the age at 2012. At least two ages, the Funtella Aeon is winding down, and also the end of the age where we enter into the age of Aquarius. But there's another great interesting thing that's going to happen on this date. And it's the reason the Greeks call the end of the age the Funtella Aeon. And what it means is, on that date, the sun will appear to rise out of the mouth of the Ouroboros. Now, what is the Ouroboros? Well, if you looked at the Milky Way galaxy at the year 2012, if you could look at it at night, it would appear to be a great serpent of light residing in the heavens. This is what the Milky Way would have appeared to the ancients.
And so there would be a large, say, open place in the center of it.
Right. And viewed at galactic central point near the constellation of Sagittarius, this dragon or the serpent Milky Way appears to eat its own tail. It will appear to have a tail or a tip end of a tail in its mouth.
Now, I have seen that symbol. So that is the Ouroboros.
Right. Now, there are two types of Ouroboros. Now, one type has just the tip of the tail in the mouth of the serpent or the dragon, and the other type is the one that has, it appears to be swallowing its tail. Now, the one with just the tip of its tail in its mouth means that it's an eternal round, like precession. It goes round and round in an endless circle. That's what that means. But the other type has a dynamic meaning, and it means that this is a trans-dimensional opening, a portal into another universe. That was its symbol. Now, in Volume 1, Ark of Millions of Years, we discussed this, that how Noah sailed across the cosmic sea to get to this planet. All right?
Mm-hmm.
The cosmic sea was understood by the ancients to be the dark rift in the Milky Way. Now, astronomers today believe that dark rift contains a spinning black hole. Am I correct?
Yes.
All right. This spinning black hole, the ancients didn't have a name for it. So rather than call it a spinning black hole, they call it an Ouroboros. All right.
I understand.
Okay. So the Ouroboros was believed to be a portal into heaven. And I believe in our book, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 1, we discuss this, how spinning black holes could be transdimensional portals. Well, this verifies it. Well, the sun is going to appear to rising out of the mouth of the serpent on those days from 21 to 23rd of December 2012. And this is very significant because the Earth is going to be right behind the sun.
So the Earth is going to be between the sun and the Ouroboros.
Well, I would say it's probably trailing the sun. If the sun is rising out of the Ouroboros, the sun will be right behind. The Earth will be right behind it.
Okay, so what does that mean? What happens then?
It means that we are in the cosmic sea, or in the door of the portal. Now.
So a lot of our listeners know, and of course readers of the book know, that this is we live on a binary planet.
Right.
That the Earth is actually made up of two different phases or types of matter. One, which for all intents and purposes, we will call telestial or physical matter, and the other a terrestrial or a spiritual matter. And right now, those two phases of matter are in harmony, and so we see them and sense them as a physical earth.
Right.
And about this time, because of the earth's position relative to the sun, relative to the Ouroboros, what is going to happen?
Well, we don't know exactly, but I can tell you what I have read that's been forecast by it. Some of this comes from the Zolkin calendar, and others have, down through the ages, written things about it. And one, Plato says, when this alignment occurs, it's going to be of catastrophic nature. Something catastrophic is going to happen. That was back in the days of Plato.
Kind of like the weather we've been having lately?
I would say so. We have two planets that are united right now. But what's happened is there has been too much negative influence. And this is more Asian thinking, you might say. But they are no longer vibrating in harmony, and they're in danger of separating. And that's what's causing all the natural disasters to occur. And I believe you interviewed on a talk show about that in the past. Am I right?
Yes, sort of like a dissonant chord, like two notes vibrating out of harmony. We sort of get a different modulation, a different vibration.
Right.
You know, interesting, because just a few days ago, maybe a little over a week ago, there was a terrible quake in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that there was a quake about 5 on the Richter scale on the West Coast, and there was a very strange quake. It just made a blip in the news. I've made a little bit of research on it, and I've been able to find out a couple of unique things. There was a quake of 5.5 in Japan this week. The unique thing about that quake is the epicenter. It was 21 miles into the crust. 21 miles below Japan,
well,
toward the center of the earth.
You're probably right on that, and we're going to see a lot more natural disasters occurring, as you said in your past radio interview. But when we are in this alignment, what is predicted, according to the Zolkin calendar, there will be 3 days of darkness, pitch black darkness, and the earth will start to tremble and shake. The shaking will not come from underground, but it will be from above. I don't know how violent it's going to be. It could be a mild shaking. It could really be rough. It'll be 3 days of terror. And what is happening is that the earths are separating, and the spirit earth is going to rise and pass through the Ouroboros into another dimension. This is what it says.
Now, who's going to be on that earth?
Well, just let me tell you this first. The Zolkin calendar says the earth will pass into the fourth dimension and ascend into heaven. That's what it predicts. Now, we know that a physical earth cannot do this,
mm-hmm.
but its spiritual nature can.
Sort of like when a human dies.
Right.
Its body doesn't lift up off the ground and go into heaven, but the spirit does.
The spirit does. The spirit of the earth is going to depart. It is the rapture, or the translation of the earth. It is the rapture of the righteous living people on the earth and the righteous dead. This is what is predicted. And many other seers, spiritualists, they come very close to it. They say humans are going to be changed into bodies of light. They're going to be a different type of human. They were right. They were correct, but they didn't use the term rapture. And that's a more modern-day term, rapture.
Yes, I think rapture is a modern term added to Scripture.
Right, but it's actually a process of translation. This is what is forecast to happen. Now, it's not the second coming of Christ. It is the rapture.
Now, what is translation?
Well, it's the It's a change that comes over physical entities, either human or the earth. It's a change that comes over them that allows them to live in a spiritual dimension. Our physical bodies are not equipped or designed to live there. They have to be changed in order to do it.
So now how is that different from, say, transfiguration?
It's the same. Translation, transfiguration, it's one and the same.
But I understand transfiguration is sort of a temporary condition. Like,
well, you're right about that.
Peter, James, and John, or Moses, or other prophets that have been, you know, changed temporarily so they could withstand facing the glory of God. Abraham, you know, face to face, and then once that event is over, they return more or less to their mortal state.
Well, you're correct. It is, but a translation is a permanent, more permanent condition.
I see. So it's like instant resurrection.
Right. And this is what is predicted to happen, and this is the reason we're trying to get our book out, to warn the people and the radio listening audience as well to be prepared.
Now, well, I understand that. Now, the warning, you would think if the Zolt'kin calendar is so has such a great reputation of predicting these cataclysms and key events in the past, that leaders in the know, supposed spiritual leaders, would give it enough credence in these last days, if we truly do live in the end times, that they would be shouting it from the rooftops. You know, this is what's going to happen, people. Let's wise up.
Well, I don't think the world knows about it. You see, your spiritual leaders have been more interested in warning about the great event. They've been preaching it for centuries. Be prepared. The rapture is coming, the translation. They have concentrated on that rather than trying to find the source or the date. We, on the other hand, have done a lot of research on this thing, and we have been more interested in proving the actual date. I think people are intimidated when you try to mix science with religion. A lot of people that feel like they're qualified to do this, they don't have enough background or knowledge to search it out, or the ability to find the answer, and so rely on other people to do it for them. Unfortunately, many of your ministers and everything feel the same way. So it's a vicious cycle, you see.
I see. So really, for centuries, scientists were their religious people.
Right.
And then, perhaps in the days of Da Vinci, although he was a very charismatic and enigmatic figure, but probably more in the days of Galileo, when he was proving with his telescopes that planets were round and that we actually revolved around the sun instead of the other way around, and there was sort of a scientific-religious schism at that point. In other words, the church called science blasphemy and science called the church ignorant, and I guess it just began at that point, and now we've gone one eternal round, we've come back to square one, and with the Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 1, we have once again united science and religion, or science and spiritual teaching into one, and with Volume 2 we just go a step further.
Right, I think you'll find Volume 2 really great. What really drew my attention to the 2012 end time date that the Mayans used was the fact that they used this calendar and it was so accurate. In fact, of all the ancient calendars still in use today, this is the only one that has never, and I emphasize the word never, been in error. So I immediately took notice when it gave what it was going to, what it predicted to happen for the year 2012. I took notice. So I have a lot of credence in this calendar, and is it going to happen for sure? We don't know. But this calendar has never been in error, and therefore I think it is prudent to be prepared.
Well, you know, we could probably do another show just on this. There have been so many Edgar Cayces, Nostradamuses, prognosticators in every age that have somehow been able to describe future states so accurately, down to the machines we use, our social habits, geological events, and even astrological events, that there must be some connection, some ability to see or sense past what we call the arrow of time, this little thing that goes around and around the numbers 1 through 12 on my watch, on my wrist. There must be a way to see past that time, bring that knowledge back to the past, which is our present right now, and use it to prepare for that future event.
Well, Brooks, I might say that I think in our day and time we've gotten a little bit too scientific-minded in the respect that we have neglected our ancient knowledge, and we've lost that.
Ever learning and never coming to a knowledge of the truth.
Right. We've lost that ancient knowledge. We thought it was myth, it was unscientific, it wasn't proven. So everybody's forgotten about it. Most everyone knew about the Zolkine calendar and the Ouroboros up into the late 17th century, and then suddenly it just disappeared.
Well,
no one seems to know about it.
Well, I want one. I think the readers of Volume 1 and Volume 2 will want to have one on their wall that they can spin around and click off these accurately, just as the ancients did. Do you think we could make it that common for our readers?
Well, I doubt it.
We can't make 100 million date keepers out there.
They may be a rush of tourists down there to see the Guatemalan day keepers.
Well, I can tell you this much. 3 days of darkness with shaking from above will definitely get people's attention.
Well, I think so.
I'm not sure where I would want to live while that was going on, but I could probably name half a dozen places I definitely would not want to live while that's going on.
I'd like to say this. You know, we are late in getting this knowledge out. Had we retained the old knowledge that was lost, we would have already have known about this Zolkine prediction 100 years ago. It's really hampered us by the loss of this information.
And what do you think caused the loss? Was it the wickedness of men, or just the race of science to make us mortal gods?
I think it was the race of science, and then another thing, they wanted to use the Gregorian calendar. It was easier to use, but we really should have kept both. The Mayans had this part of their calendar, they could use a wheel and roll it backwards, and they could go back to the past and find out what happened when eclipses were due, certain movements of the planets and the stars. They could go back 10 million years with this thing. And they could roll it forward and go that far into the future with it.
Sounds like date keepers could spend a lifetime studying the events that were going to happen and that have happened in the past.
Right. The only thing that has survived of the Zolkine calendar is in a tablet form or on a calendar or paper form. The old wheel was probably destroyed in the Spanish conquest.
Yes, I was going to make that comment that when Cortez arrived in Montezuma's time and day, the society of that day kept very, very accurate records. And the media of choice in those days was a thinly hammered solid gold plate. It was very easy to write upon. It did not tarnish, and it would last a long time in good shape. So when Cortez arrived, not only were there literally gold streets and gold temples, but there were also hundreds and thousands of golden books in libraries. And because of the greed of the Spanish conquistadors, they melted down all of these books, all of these records, and ancient tools with which these people built their elaborate society and their government and fortified their religious beliefs, melted them all down into chains, links of chains, and shipped them back to Spain.
Yes, there's been many a scientist and archaeologist to shed tears over that, believe me.
Well, I understand that even today, in the dense jungles, where nature has reclaimed a lot of these ancient villages and small cities, that looters, grave robbers, treasure hunters have gone in and removed many more very, very valuable and important records.
That sadly is true. The Mexican and Guatemalan the governments of all those countries down there, they try to prevent this from happening. If you get caught carrying artifacts out of the country, it is a long prison term. But I suspect, and there are traditions and legends, that some of these metal plates, gold plates, are still hidden in caves or tunnels or whatever.
Ah, the halls of records.
Could be the halls of records, yes.
Oh, that we could find one of those.
Did you hear me?
Hmm?
I said, we think we know where it is.
Yes, we do, don't we?
Hall of Records.
We're not going to publish it, folks, but we will reveal it at some future date.
It's in volume two.
But you have to buy the book.
That's right.
Speaking of that, let me have one more commercial, and then I'm going to go into my Nephilim section. I'm going to cover a little bit of current events that have happened, and I'm going to try to open listeners' ears and their consciousness to something that hits very close to home. Well, intelligent design is undoubtedly the hottest subject in the world today. It is attracting attention as the most plausible alternative to evolution. In fact, it brings evolution and creation together. The theory of evolution by itself is so full of holes, the science community really wonders how it is even called a theory. A theory would have some kind of scientific method applied to assemble facts to support and possibly prove the theory to be fact. No such thing has ever been done to support this theory. For all the countless dollars and man years that have been spent, there has not been so much as a single cell that has been shown to have evolved from another species. Now there is a book that explains how species came to be and how the Earth was created and relocated to its present orbit. The arc of millions of years is called, by thousands of readers in many countries, the Intelligent Design Handbook. The book is true. The facts are real and provable. It is available at www.arcofmillionsofyears.com or at Barnes & Noble Booksellers or your local Joseph Bell Bookstore or Davis Kidd Booksellers. And, of course, if you buy tonight during the show, in fact, if you buy any time tonight, we will reset the online store in the morning. We will include free shipping. And if you buy the hardback, you will be sent the entire book on audio CD at a later date for free. And, of course, you can listen to it in your car or on your iPod or on your computer. We even have two free audio chapters on that website that you can download to your computer, burn your own CD, and listen to it in your car or give it away to friends that may need to know the truth. Now, our Nephilim section. Well, part of the enslavement of any society is the monopoly and discretionary access to energy. And, of course, energy comes in many forms. Energy in the form of money. if a government or a leadership of a society wants to control that society, or maybe better put, allow certain aspects, certain portions of that society to benefit from that government and others not to, then they would control access to capital. They would control, well, access to God. We saw during the Middle Ages that the Almighty Christian Church controlled access to God. They would not let people own copies of their own scriptures. They wouldn't let them memorize scripture. I cannot count the number of men, women, and children who were burned at the stake or beheaded because they had memorized some portion of the Holy Writ. And they also monopolize and control raw materials. Sometimes it's even water, not allowing you access to a river or to a warm water port. Some way, that government or that enslaving body controls these amenities, these commodities, so that certain people have them and certain people do not. This is how value is created, and those that have not have to buy from those who have. Well, one of the things, the points that I wanted to bring up tonight, there's a recent article that supports my assertion that the oil scarcity that we have heard so much about in the news is an absolute fraud. If you believe that the U.S. has no choice but to rely on foreign oil until we ultimately run out of the precious resource, you need to be prepared to be challenged by new views that have the opportunity to help give birth to a new generation of oil politics and economics. I'm quoting from an article in WorldNetDaily.com entitled, "Forget Everything You Know About Oil, Black Gold Stranglehold Explodes Common Myths." And one of these myths is that oil, crude oil, originates from the rotting carcasses of dinosaurs and ancient jungles. I have long since maintained, since my many, many years of spectrographic research of the Earth, that oil does not come from dinosaurs, never did come from dinosaurs, didn't come from ancient forests, that it is actually generated by the formation of a planet, and it has even arrived to this planet from space, as long-chain hydrocarbons raining down upon the planet and then seeping into its crevices and caves under the ground. And the myth of fossil fuels is, and this is Corsi and Smith argue, that deep, and what they call abiotic theory of oil, is a more reliable theory than fossil fuel theory. It rejects the contention that the oil was formed from the remains of plant and animal life that died millions of years ago. Instead, they believe in Thomas Gold's argument that oil is abiotic, which means it did not come from dead animals. It's actually pushed upward toward the Earth's surface by the intense pressures of the Earth's core and the influence of centrifugal force that the Earth exerted upon the specific gravity of oil as a fluid substance. So the running out of oil theory put forth since the 70s, I guess, is an absolute myth, a fraud. And there is actually no scarcity of oil. So the high price that we're paying at the pump is not only confiscatory in its nature, it has no bearing whatsoever on the true value of oil. So how is it that we are paying $2.89 a gallon for regular today in North Carolina, when just a few years ago we were paying 95 cents a gallon? There's actually more oil being produced today and more fuel-efficient vehicle being used today than ever before, and yet there is this, quote, scarcity of oil. So the reason we bring this up in our Nephilim section is it is a classic, repeatable, historical method of enslaving a society by making energy so expensive and so exclusive that only certain productive individuals can have access to it, and those that cannot afford it do not have access to it. So I will ask my esteemed co-author, E.J. Clark, if she has an opinion on that.
You ask the tough ones, don't you? I don't know. I'll have to stop and think about that a little bit, Brooks. You asked one that's kind of out of my league.
Well, we only have 6 minutes left, so let me add some more of my personal thoughts to it. I think that there are many people out there right now that every time they stick that nozzle into their fuel neck and pull the handle and watch the price spin so much faster than the actual gallon counter going by, and they wonder, oh my goodness, how many more times can I afford to spend $40 or $50 or $60 to fill up my tank, and I must do it a couple times a week? That is a lot of money. Now, the interesting thing about this is that there, as I said before, is no bearing between the price of oil and the actual value of oil. It does not take a genius to see that the instant there is a hiccup in supply, if the storm is approaching a refinery, if a pipeline explodes, if a oil tanker runs aground, within 45 minutes, fuel prices are going up. Now, the interesting thing about it is it takes about 20 to 25 days, for crude oil to go from the ship through the refinery, through the quality process, into the pipeline, and get to that gas station. So if you are really going to see a price increase, you shouldn't see it for about 20 days, because the fuel that's in the ground of that gas station was produced nearly a month before then at the cheaper price. So why does the price go up today?
Well, don't they say, Brooks, that they have to replace that fuel with higher cost?
Not true. Not true. There's actually a glut of gasoline. It is being rationed in order to create a shortage. If you don't believe me, just pick up your local stock report and look at the profits the oil companies have been filing the last 2 years. Records, $8 billion a quarter in additional profits. That doesn't sound like an oil company that's short of supply.
Well, I'm glad I'm hanging on to my Chevron oil stocks.
Yes, that's the one thing. It's sort of like shopping at Walmart and owning Walmart stock.
Correct.
Well, I, for one, would like to see fuel prices settle to supply and demand prices. I don't mind demand pushing the price wherever it's supposed to go. If it gets too high, people will stop buying it. But to artificially pump it up, to act the way that ancient civilizations has acted under the direction of the Nephilim, kings have rendered access to knowledge, access to fuel, access to water, access to food exclusive, and have kept it out of the hands of the masses and only in the hands of the elite or those who pay homage to their rule.
You cover that nicely in the volume two.
Correct. So, in the final 120 seconds of this show, I would like to make the offer one more time. Those of you that are listening tonight or who access the archives between now and sunup on the 20th of October, you may purchase the Ark of Millions of Years at the website www.arkofmillionsofyears.com. You'll get free shipping. And if you buy the hardback, you will receive the entire book on audio CD shipped to you free at a later date. Or you can pick it up at your local Barnes & Noble, Joseph Beth, or Davis Kidd booksellers. Christmas is coming up, and I personally can think of no finer gift for anyone than a copy of the most comprehensive book ever written on the creation of the earth. 530 pages for a mere $19.95. That is a great deal. So I would like to, as host of X Squared Radio, bid you good evening, Earth Explorers. I want to very much thank my esteemed archaeologist and co-author, E.J. Clark, for joining us tonight. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And we will sign off for tonight. We will see you next Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, for X Squared Radio. Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.